Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about keeping it real. Great guests, interesting topics, so get on board. Listen, learn, live.
Good evening and welcome to the Coco Express Show for Wednesday, June 12th, 2013. And it has been an amazing week and I am so glad that we are here today. We have an amazing, wonderful guest. I don't know if many of you know about the play by Bernard Shaw called Pygmalion. Well, we have a modern day Pygmalion with us this evening, and just to give a recap about the show, a gentleman finds a street woman, and he brings her into his home, and he refines her and polishes her up to the point where his really elite friends were not even able to tell that she was a street woman. And for the music industry, this gentleman has done that time and time and time again. I'm not saying that he's taken street people, but I'm just saying he's taken artists who are rough around the edges, and he has polished them up, and he has made them into some phenomenal talents that we have enjoyed and we've seen and we've heard. And I would like to take the opportunity to introduce to you a Mr. Angelo Ellerby of Double Exposure Media Relations.
Wow. What a great, great introduction. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. I mean, it is a well-deserving introduction because of what you have done and what you do.
You know, I was having a conversation about 2 days ago about my celebration of 40 years in doing this whole media and artist development with a very dear friend of mine. And she was saying, Enzo, don't you think it's time for you to recreate the will? I said, no, I think it's time for the will to start to recreate and ride these young kids to get them to understand what longevity is about. I said, I'm not saying that I've served my time in terms of 40 years in the music industry, but I just want young people today to understand the importance of their contributions. It's not all the way, it's not all always about what you're getting is also what you're giving. And their contribution musically and their legacy should exist forever. So I want them to understand, when I'm reading stories and I'm watching TV about Justin Bieber and Lil Wayne and this Amanda Bynum, it bothers me because there is a hole somewhere in relationship or further development that they're turning in to this kind of artist. So my artist development program is one from the heart. It's my mother's teaching. It's their mother's, hopefully would have been their mother's teaching, to give them the kind of self-confidence and the self-insurance to endure, to understand what longevity was about, to understand what the commitment to the artist, and more importantly, the commitment that you make to your fans. They follow you. So my program is all about, it's a 24-week artist development program, but I get really, just like your introduction about, your commentator was saying about the realness of where you come from with No Chaser, I'm the same way. I want these kids to be able to stay in the game. I want them to understand that their image and their persona is going to be around longer than they will possibly be around. When an interview is being done, it can never be erased. It's always going to be there. Whatever you did in the past is going to be with you for the future. So the artist development, my company, I mean, I think my success is because I'm sincere and because I have that faith and I have that confidence and that endurance that was given to me by my parents. And I just believe that everyone should have that kind of cultural experience for change and to get into what it is that they say they want to do and learn. It's a classroom. Life is nothing but a stage. We're merely actors and actresses. Be able to read your script, know your part, stay in your lane, and achieve.
All right, now, you have had the pleasure and the opportunity to work with some of the, well, from my perspective, some of the most well-known artists that we have come to know throughout history. Now, when they come to you, how do you know what to do with them? How do you know how to work with them? What do you target?
Because I tell everyone, I've never sold a record. I sell talent, which makes me, I don't even read bios, and I don't listen to music. I have to have a rapport and a relationship. I want to know your mother, your father, your grandmother, your sisters, and your brothers. I want to know what you like to eat, what you don't like to eat, what colors you... It's a relationship. Once I have a conversation or conversations, I got what I'm selling. It's never the product. It's never the album. It's never the CD. It's never the hair combs. It's always what's behind it and what's in the soul of my clients. So I select based on their commitment, and I'm straight up with no chaser. I tell them, what do you want from this? How do you want this? And how are you going to go and get it? And that you can't fake the funk. You got to be up. Because I always tell people, the truth is never going to be on strike. You got to tell the truth and go after what it is that you want to receive. So I sit with them. You know, it's like in the case of Mary J. Blige. She went through 24 weeks with me. And I remember the first day that I met, she was an hour late. And I was about to go to lunch. So her bodyguard and her got off of the elevator, which was on my floor, and I looked at them. She says, I'm Mary. I'm here to see Angelo. I'm Angelo, and I'll see you tomorrow because you're an hour late. Mm. And she looked at me like really strange. I believe how you start is how you finish. So let's not do this today. I'm already paid for today. Let's do this tomorrow. Same time, same place. The next day she came back. She was 45 minutes early. And okay. What we did for 2.5 hours, we sat there. The strangest thing had happened. I raised my nephews as my sons. And I stayed committed to my family, particularly for my last son. I said, I will not move out of mom's house until your graduation. Now I'm preparing to move out. Apartment and everything settled. And I got an emergency phone call maybe 20 minutes before Mary came off of the elevator. And it was my sister. She says, I think you need to come home. I said, tell me, because I have a meeting. Why do I need to come home? She says, just get home as soon as you possibly can. So my other sister called me. His mother called me. My sister got, she's no longer with us, but she was a drug addict. She called me. She says, your son, we just found your son with 9 bullets in his back. He died. But I had to stay there because Mary was there. And then the day before, I said, you know, you're late. I can leave. And we sat there, and I never listened to music. And she had a song. She said, Angela, have you listened to my songs? I said, no, girl, I ain't listened to no music. She said, well, I want you to listen to this song. And it was like, if you can look into my life and see what I see.
Mm-hmm.
And as strong as I thought I was, knowing that my son and my nephew, however you want to have it, had just died, and she started crying before me, and she was telling me that she missed her father, that was a bond that has never been broken. That bond, God works in mysterious ways. We sat there. We had 2 hours of a meeting. I think we must have sat there for 5 hours. And we just talked, and we got familiar with one another. And God just came in and took complete control, and she was honest with me. She told me all of the trials and the tribulations of her life. I became a part of her life. And that's how I develop an artist. It's all about nurturing. And a lot of times, moms and dads are too busy out there on their job, trying to take care of their kids. They're missing links in the relationship. Mary's mother and father was divorced. Her mother was living in the projects. Her mother was a nurse. She had crazy hours, just her and her sister. And so there was a void of love, understanding, someone to talk to, compassion. I filled the void for those 24 weeks, and we became friends. We began to, I said, where are you having problems at? Did you finish high school? No, Angela, I didn't. Where's your comprehension level at? And I just started to read, and I started reading to her from the Holy Bible. And then we went on to The Native Son, and then we went on to other books. And we began to read simple things, things totally away from the music industry. That's building a relationship and building trust. That's where I started.
Now, you have such an amazing life. I mean, you've lived several lifetimes in this short time on this planet. And how did you start out? I mean, it's so interesting, and I would love to hear how you started out.
Let me tell you, I was born to an amazing lady, amazing lady. My mother encouraged me from my God. She loved me when I didn't even know what love was about. She shared love. She was a tough mom. I never understood my mother until I really got older to understand that she was giving me survival tools. You know, you had to mop the steps, you had to clean, you had to sweep, you had to do the dishes, you had to wash the clothes, you had to do things around the house. At 13 years old, you had to get a job. You had to bring money into the table. It was seven of us. With my mom, it was eight. So she was just into giving you life skills. My mom completed an eighth grade education, but I never knew that I was poor. She was a waitress. People say today, why do you tip so much? I said, because that's how I went to college, off of tips. But my mother nurtured me, and she loved me unconditionally. And she taught me all the things that, that I'm so appreciative to the day. So my teaching to all of these young people that I work with is really from the training of my mother. And my mother was totally no-nonsense. I went to FIT. I designed clothes, and I got a degree in design. And she said to me, because I was very confused, she said to me, I don't care what you do, but you're going to bring me my money every month. I had to pay rent at 14 years old. She said to me, I couldn't care if you hung leaves on the tree, as long as they pay you and you come in here and you give me my money. And I thought I was like, wow, is this about the money? But it was really about if she was going to be here, if she's not going to be here, and how was I going to survive. So I started doing, my sister used to model for Ebony Fashion Fair, and Eunice Johnson had this touring fashion show that she did. And my oldest sister, who I adore, was like my second mom, Rose, gave me maybe some of the time that my mom was unable to give to me because she was always working. And she taught me many things about culture. And I wanted to design clothes. And I started designing clothes at like 14, 15 years old. And what happened is that I started designing prom dresses. Each year before my graduation, like 6 or 7 years before graduation, I had put machines in the basement, and I was making prom dresses, 200-300 prom dresses, $300-400 a prom dress. I was the bread and butter in my house. I would go to school, come home, and sew and make the dresses, and I had two other people that were working with me. After that, I began to do fashion shows. I was very involved in my community. I was born and raised in the city of Newark, and back when I was being raised, Newark was looked at as, and it's probably still looked at the same way, as a poverty-stricken community. No culture, no performing arts, no nothing. So I began to do fashion shows, and I would raise money like for the NACP and different various organizations, the Boys Club, the Girls Club, and I had these big fashion shows. But the key thing for me was to bring culture. So 1 year I got Carmen de Lagalon and Joffrey Holder to come in and dance, along with the Alvin Ailey dance troupe. Then I would bring in Beverly Johnson and Iman. At 15, 16, 17 years old in high school, I was doing this, and I was bringing in 3,000 to 4,000 people each year. So I was making my way, and because of my mother, she allowed me to make my way. I was being productive, and she was proud. I started my business, now called Double Exposure, in the basement of my mother's house. I didn't know nothing about business plans and going to the bank, I knew that my mother says, at the end of the month, I want my $600. I went into the garage. I got an old dining room table, two chairs, called the phone company, and got a teen phone. You remember the teen phone? And
yes.
I got that teen phone, and I created Double Exposure. Strangely, there was, with these fashion shows, Camille M. Tume, which is the wife of the Grammy Award-winning James M. Tume, would come to my shows every year. And one year she came backstage and she says, I really, just really wanted to meet you and this thing, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm working on an album cover for my husband. I didn't know who her husband was. And at that time, he had one of the biggest records out. It was called Juicy Fruit. Still didn't know who he was. She says, and we want to know if you would help us to style the album cover. And I said, oh, sure, I will. And I did. And it was a You, Me, and He album cover. Then he came to me and asked me, he said, all the stuff that you're doing for my wife, do you think you can do that for me? I said, but you're into music. He says, business is business, Angelo. I began to manage a two-time Grammy Award winner, and I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But this man was such a man of knowledge and care and sensitive and compassionate. He taught me step by step by sending me over to Epic and Sony, for which he was signed to. And I would go into these meetings and I feel so stupid and so dumb. And they would call him to me and said, you sure this is going to be your manager? He said, oh, yeah, this is going to be my manager. And every day I would come back from the meetings, I had to go to the yellow room in his house. That was a room for heat, where he would teach me and how I needed to come off and how I needed to speak and the diction and the whole other bit. So I began to be M2May's manager, but then he did a sound score for the movie The Native Son that starred Oprah Winfrey. And he needed to have a publicist. Now, I didn't know what the hell a publicist was. I know that I could manage and I was designing and I was this. So the publicist never showed up to his house. I had to be the publicist. So I went out and bought like 200 newspapers, and I went to all the music pages and took the bylines off of them, and I started calling. That's how I became a media person.
Wow.
That's how I began to do what I do. Then it was a dance artist. Like I did like Jocelyn Brown and Sybil and Adiva and Jomanda. I did everything in my community, and I grew from the community. And I had the pleasures of working on that film with M2MA. The film was produced by Diane Silvers, but it starred Oprah Winfrey. It was her first major motion picture. And I just got a chance to meet and work with all of the greats, and I was very excited about it. And then one thing turned into the other and the other and the other. And, you know, I guess Double Exposure was born from the corners of my mother's basement.
That is, we talked about a shoestring operation, a successful shoestring operation. That is really...
But you know what? You have to do things from the heart. It's not about the money. The money always will come. You try to figure out how you're going to do this and how you're going to do that. If you're working from your heart, I believe that God is a supplier to meet your needs. But you can't sit up and pray and don't act on it. Yeah, you can pray to him, but you've got to take the steps to get to the goals and the apex of your life. And I took steps. I never worried about money. I was more worried about if I can do the job, if I can get the client, and if I can make my client satisfied. That's the key thing. And still to this day, it's not about the money for me. It's not. What it's about for me is to make a client happy. I don't even talk about contracts anymore. Because if somebody's unhappy, they ain't going to pay you. So why am I going to go through all this contract stuff? We handshake 4 months, 4 months. This is what it is. That's what it is. Let's go and do it. If they're unhappy with something, they're going to tell me, and they're not going to be with me anymore. And next, I can't take myself through something that I have no control over. But I do know that the work ethic of it all makes sense for me.
Okay. Now, you manage artists that are in the music industry, as well as in sports, as well as in the ministry. Now, how do all, well, is it word of mouth or people?
Do you know what? I never, ever spent a dime in promotions. Never, ever. I have been so blessed. And I was just telling my assistant, Ulysses, today, because we're doing this whole marketing and branding plan on the company. And then so he was Googling me. He said, Sony, what's your life story? You got books? Why did somebody brought your life story? I said, yes, Ulysses, someone brought my life story. And he went to Google, and Google, he came to me. He said, really? He said, I knew all the surface stuff, but I never knew that you were on the cover of Parade, that you did the New York Times and Gentleman's Quarterly. And, yeah, Ulysses, but it comes from a work ethic. And it's like, if you plan to see, if I tell people, if you stay out of other people's backyard and cut the grass and nurture the grass in your yard, you'll never want to go to the other side to find out what take care of you. And I've learned the importance with trial and error to my career. I have learned the importance to loving God and to love myself, no matter what the opposition is or was, to stay committed to me, and to believe and to forge ahead. Nothing stands in the way. You get depressed, and depression is not a bad thing. It's really, I look at depression as a wake up pill. But you got to come up out of it, and you got to keep it moving. You acknowledge it, your feelings being hurt, you're not getting what you need to have, but you got to come out of it, and you got to keep it moving. Distinction in being ambitious, and then being ambitious. And so many people are more ambitious than they are ambitious. They're all over. You got to stay focused. It's like follow the yellow brick road. Click your heels three times when that road gets to an end. And come out the land of Oz and get real with yourself and understand that this is your career. Not your manager's career, not your artistic director's career. This is your career. And you have to guide it. You got to respect it. And you got to be thankful for it. Because there's a fade in this career, in the careers as well. I'm sorry.
That's okay. But you've made history and so on so many different levels. You've also had Kaplan University Incorporated, your charm school program, and
wow.
They still use it today?
Do you know that's really wonderful that you bring it up? Yeah, they did. And you know what? I'm always amazed, always amazed when I'm watching Ulysses go through my Google. I said, oh, really? I didn't see that. I never saw that. But when Kaplan University adapted my artist development program, I was really proud. But you know my proudest moment? My proudest moment in my whole entire life was 2 weeks ago. I got a chance to go and see Motown, the Broadway play.
Yes.
And it was my life. It was such my life. It was about a family and someone and a child in a dream. A child that was confused and did not know what they wanted to do, but they wanted to make something work. And when they found that something that they wanted to do, the family band around them and made it be what it is, Motown today. I sat there and almost cried. It was like, really? I never thought I had to go through this, the racism, the prejudices, I was so in awe of Berry Gordy. I had the pleasure of meeting him a month prior with Dionne Warwick because they were doing something for Jesse Jackson, and they were premiering the play there. So, of course, Miss Warwick knew my hero, my mentor, and she knew how I cared about Berry Gordy. She said, and this was her introduction, Berry, this is my publicist. He's been with me 20 years, and I promise you he knows every record that you ever created, every artist that ever came out of your development company, and can tell you everything about you. And he looked at me, and he smiled. And I said, Mr. Gordy, I don't even know what to say. I admire you through all of the struggles. And then when he said, man, did you know about me and Martin Luther King? I said, no, sir, I didn't. So he went on to tell me, you know, the March on Washington, do you know who supported that, who gave him the money to do that? It was Berry Gordy.
Really?
This man was so aligned to social and political things and could never put his name out in the front. It was him.
Wow. Wow.
So, just to be in that presence and to see that dreams do come true and that you can never give up, no matter what, when you can't pay the bill, when the credit card don't work, when the lights are cut off, when you can't, when all of those things happening, that's when faith comes in. And that's when you become a believer. That's when you fall in love with God, then fall romantically in love with yourself, and then you move forward. That's what I've learned. I've learned that in my life. It's no that the wagon doesn't stop. The show must go on. Sickness and health. I'm married to my career, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer. I'm committed to this. For 40 years, I've been committed to it, and I think I'll die being committed to it. I work from my heart, which is probably the biggest mistake in my life. I need to work from my brain, not my heart. I don't need to be sensitive or weak or mild. I don't come off that way, but that's my heart. And I would do for anyone, and we don't even have to talk about dollars and cents. If they don't have it, they can't pay me. If I'm excited about it, I'm going to do it. And it's, you know, when you talk about Kaplan, the university that adapted my artist development program, I went around to prisons and drug rehabilitation centers with the artist development program many years ago. I must have toured maybe 13, 14 different jails and drug rehabilitation centers because these people are going to find it very hard to get jobs. And America shuns them when they get out of prison or when you're addicted. So I went in with June Ambrose, the fashion stylist, Byron Barnes, the creator of Iman's line of cosmetics, and I went from prison to prison, and I did classes. This is how you dress. This is when you go for a job. This is what you need to say. This is how you write a resume. This is what you do. It's not just artist development. It's development. My mother did it to me, and she did it for me. It's my job to do it and to continue to do it. Someone said to me yesterday, you said, Angela, you need to go and do some press on you because people are thinking you're just a black publicist. And I said, well, is there something wrong with being a black publicist? She says, no, you're much more than that. I said, but I don't have a window that people can look and see all the things that I have done. I'm good at accepting who I am and what my contributions have been. And if it's in the minds of people to think limited, and it's very much that, then that's on them. She said, no, I was just pitching you for someone major. It's okay. I've been around. I'd rather take that little that artist that has no faith and no belief, build that, give them all the winning tools to win by, I'm satisfied. And then they can grow and they can be great.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it is about the money. You know you need to make the money in order to live and exist, but it's also about the give back, too.
That's great. Now, you mentioned that you, Berry Gordy to you was like your mentor, even though he didn't know it.
Right.
How did it feel to work with Michael Jackson, knowing that he came out of that camp?
Yeah, you know, the relationship with Michael Jackson for 2 years was very strange. I must have spoke to Michael 3 or 4 times, seen him twice. I dealt with a guy by the name of Bob Jones, who was his senior vice president of media. You have to understand that Double Exposure is not just a PR company or an artist development company. We also did damage control. And I worked, surely he's fabulous, he's great, He's one of the, if not the entertainer of all entertainers. But they came to me because allegedly there was trouble and paradise with the young children that he was associating himself with. And they came to me and asked for me to aid and assist in this. And I created a program working along with Vince Ferguson. It was called the Children's Choice Awards. And I always believe that everyone should go back to the scene of the accident, recreate it, find out what the mistakes were. And the only way you're going to do that is that you bring the kids back to the accident. Recreate it. I put together at City Center 2,000 kids. We gave awards away to the governors and senators of the state, but we also gave a Lifetime Achievement Award to Michael Jackson. Michael stood on that stage, and it was like the earth was separating. Those kids went in crazy. We got a great deal of press. We surrendered to the press on this whole thing. And afterwards, I got a wonderful letter and said, "You will always be my publicist." So to be in the presence, because he came, I'm going to be honest with you, he came in a garbage truck.
Really?
And I was at the back of the building waiting for him to come. But nobody told me how, I thought it was just going to be a limousine. Now I'm getting very afraid that this man is not going to make it. So when the garbage truck came to the back of the building and they pulled up the thing and he came out of it, and I just looked. My mouth was open, and he came to me. He says, "You've got to be Angelo." I said, "Yes, sir, I am. And I thank you for all of what you're doing for me." And that went on. That was a one-time situation, but my services went on for 2 years.
Okay.
So I think he was one of the nicest clients that I've ever had. And showed appreciation, showed you the Barry Gordy love, showed you the Joe Jackson care and concern. I mean, came after me, after everything was over. He said to his assistant, "Where is Angelo?" I was standing right there. I got to say, I have something special for him. And he gave me the biggest hug, and he put something in my hand that I never deposited in the bank. I still have it, ready in my safe deposit box. But it's all about relationships. I wasn't selling a record. I wasn't selling the talent. I was there to care, to be careful, to bring a whole nother kind of presence and appreciation of his work and his contribution. So it was wonderful. It was totally wonderful.
Now,
but you know, greater than that to me was to work with Diana Ross's daughter, Rodney, Rhonda.
Oh, okay.
And that was wonderful because I was preparing her for her wedding. We went into Bloomingdale's. We tried on dresses. That was really great. And just to talk to her mother on the phone daily.
Yes.
A very loving mother. Very caring mother. And that was about maybe 10 weeks of an artist development and to get her ready for her wedding.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, you manage DMX. And we've seen the press and we've seen the shows and we've seen everything that's going on with that. How do you manage an artist like that?
Well, you have to care about the artist. See, I can deal with that because I grew up around that. I lived in the city of Newark. My two sisters were drug addicts. One sister died. I think you have to have tolerance. And I had tolerance. It was 5 years of a bumpy road. But how I think I got to Earl was we would pray. Every time he would get upset and go off, we would sit back and we would pray, and we would talk about God. He's a lover of God. And there is something inside of him that is totally, and it's not even the addiction. It's the parenting or the lack of parenting. It's the struggle of the parent who's trying to take care of three or four kids not giving the time to the son being mischievous because the mother's not there. Nobody's understanding nobody. Everyone becomes accusatory. Everybody wants to blame everybody for the malfunctionings of the family. Well, with me, I sat back and I looked at it and I said, I can help. And it became addictive. Abusive, but addictive, that I wanted to help. And I stayed with him only because I knew what he had, extremely talented, and what he needed. And I thought it was me that he needed. And thus, I stayed with him for 5 years, organizing and orchestrating his career from films to TV appearances to his endorsements to his children to everything, because I'm not just a one-dimensional manager. I got to get into, you know, with Mtume, I was a nanny, I was a maid, I was a cook, I was an intern, I was everything. But that's how you develop your relationship. And that's why I say to people the importance of commitment. You can't, I like courtships. Then I like engagements. Then I like to get married.
Okay.
Don't marry me on first sight. Date me. Let me know you. Let it be worth the while, worth the wait. And even to this day, you know, and I went through a lot of hardships with X. I lost my life savings, millions of dollars, on a film that we worked on together, and he didn't do what he was, but that's neither here and there. He's still going through his trials and tribulations, and yes, I picked it right back up. Because I had to remember for 5 years, this man put food on my table. He fed my mother, my sisters, took care of my office. That's the money that I was making from him. My mother always told me, don't you ever kick anybody when they're down. Let them stand back up, and then maybe you want to kick them down. But don't kick them when they're down.
I believe we have callers on the line that want to speak with you. Are you ready for this? Oh, you love it?
Yeah,
okay, let's see. We have one caller. Hello, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, hello?
Yes,
hi. Is this the Coco Express?
Yes, it is.
Hi, what a pleasure to finally get in touch with you. I do have a question for our guest. Such a pleasure to hear your testimonial on the radio, Mr. Ellaby. I was wondering if you could offer some advice or some kind of word of encouragement to a school teacher such as myself in a system that's pretty broken. How does one branch out and help and show what's inside of me towards the children that I teach?
Sure.
Yes,
I'm going to say this to you. Fall in love with God, then fall romantically in love with yourself. Give yourself all of what you need in terms of encouragement and the will to assist and aid God in his job and his plight. It comes freely when you're able to do that. And if you're teaching anyone in any urban communities, I understand the difficulties of it. But time and patience works it out. And if you feel that you cannot be a wealth of a contributor to them, then back away and find another way that you can affect their lives just by being there, just by the simple things that you do. Love doesn't cost. Patience is what costs. And I know being a school teacher, it's like last girl on the totem pole. But you don't
Correct.
Understand how important you are to our children. They're the most underpaid people, and they have the hardest jobs. They have the hardest.
Say that again.
Their job is harder than the president of the United States.
Yes.
Because they're developing life. Their mothers and their fathers and their teachers. They come with the whole package. These kids today are having babies. The mother is 14 and the grandmother is 20, and the child is whatever. So where is the nurturing and the caring? So the teacher has to come in. I'm just going to say, love yourself so much that nothing in the world will affect your way of teaching and educating and stimulating these young minds. Do what you came to do there and do a little bit more. And if you don't think you're getting through, trust me, you're getting through. I can remember my teachers. You can remember your teachers when you were in school. The
yes,
ones
I can.
That affected you the most, the ones that you, well, particularly for me, because I was just not the school guy. This one teacher, this lady is in my mind, and I've been out of high school and college forever. She said to me, I just didn't think that the lady liked me, but I remembered her. She made it hard. I learned, and I talk about it still to this day.
Yes.
So here's my line of encouragement to you. It's not important to win every race. It's just important that you stay in the race. Eventually you will win. Do God's
Thank
work.
You.
Do God's
Thank you
work.
So much. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure speaking with you. That has encouraged my soul. Thank you so much. And thank you, Mrs. Lyle, for putting me through.
Oh, you're
Have
quite
a great
welcome.
Evening.
You too.
Okay.
God bless.
Good
God
night.
Bless you. Good night.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
We have another call on the line.
Yes.
Oh, hello. Let's see. Hello? Hello? Okay. I don't know where that one is, but she's there somewhere.
Okay.
Anyway, that was a very... What you said to the teacher was just amazing because of the simple fact that, yes, their job is sometimes thankless. And,
yeah.
And, you know, they need to be encouraged as much as anybody else. And what they do is they take in different environments into one environment. They try to make it all gel and mesh together and work. And
for 4 hours out of the day, and then they go home for 10 hours and get it all destroyed, and then she coming back trying to do the same thing again, and the parents ain't helping her, the environment is not helping her, and so
yes.
It's hard.
Yes. Now, with that, because you two have something, it's similar to what you do with the artist development, how have you been able to take some of these artists, because you've had some really hard-headed artists. How are you able to really just shape them and mold them? How are you able to do that?
Because you know what? It's easy for me because I know that they haven't been loved. And that people are difficult because there's a lack of something in their life. And you just need to find it out. You need to spend time with them. I do things with my artists. I go and I hang with them in the studio. Not because I know I'm somebody's producer, because I don't know nothing about no music. But guess what? That's time in the studio with them. Time for me to understand their work ethics, for me to talk to them, just to find out about their lives. Then when they go home, I invite myself over to Sunday dinner. I go to church with them. I'll bring them something. I'll bring their mother something. The mother will open up. The father opens up. The sisters and brothers open up. And we develop a relationship. And so you get a chance to get into the mind to find out where is all this hurt. Where's all this pain? Where's all this anguish coming from? We need to talk about it. And you need to be able to confront it. And you need to be able to deal with it. And a lot of times it has to do with the family. It has to do with something mom and dad didn't do or grandma didn't do or aunts or uncles didn't do. We have to begin to love our children unconditionally, no matter how they come. If they're slow in learning, if they're gay, if they're straight, if they're bisexual, whatever they are, they're ours. And we need to take them, bring them close to our bodies, and love them, and teach them, and aid them, and show them the way. That's what we have to do as a country, as a nation. We need to take our children, these babies who need to really be loved and cared for. And the amazing thing is when you go to do that, you get goodness. And you can feel good. I mean, I think it's great for people to do God's work. For the sacrifice that he's made for us, we need to make the sacrifice for him. I tell people every single day, I pray an hour every day. I don't hold animosities anymore. I've taken a maturity pill and I've grown up. I don't hold animosities anymore. I'm not having no strokes. I'm not having no heart attacks over something that I don't control. But I do know who does control it. So I pray on it. I give it to the God. I said, God, would you change these people the way that you've changed me? Would you accept them and let them love themselves to love you to be messengers of your work and your word. They need change. God, don't give up on them. Don't give up on the prisoners, the people in jail. Don't give up on the HIV victims or the AIDS victims. Don't give up on the cancer patients. Don't give up on the mentally retarded. Don't give up on the homeless and the shut out. We all need you, Father. Walk with us. Talk with us. Take our hands, our arms, our heart, our mind, our body, and our souls on a journey with you today, because we need you.
That's profound. That is truly profound. And you're absolutely right, because there's not one person on this planet who doesn't need that and need to know that he is there for us, with us, and will always be there for us. Now, you, the industry is changing. It's really changing. How do you see, and how is this affecting you and the artists?
I'm going to be very honest and very candid and very open with you. It is changing, if you allow it to change. You can sit back and talk about what it used to be, or you can act on what it is. You can sit back and say who you was, and then you can sit back and say, who am I? This question's all over. You either fit or sit back. I want to fit, so I'm gonna go forward with the changes. The demise of the music industry, the demise of the black music departments and record companies, the independent labels. You have to adjust and make those changes. I'm able to take the old and bring it into the new with social media, with print, with television, with all the other outlets, and make it work for me. Understanding that it's not that I just can't be a publicist or artist development person, I got to do 15 jobs in order to stay in business. So I just pray and ask God to equip me with a conversation of marketing and of branding people and doing events and doing all these other things, speaking to people like you, that allows the world to know about what it is that I do and that can call upon my service.
Yes.
My survival.
And speaking of calling upon your service, how do you get your talent? Do they come to you? Do you seek them out? How does that work?
You know, I'm going to tell you, I have never seeked out any artist. Whoever has come through my doors in yesteryears, eventually they come back. I get reoccurring clients. The word of mouth has been the greatest catalyst for me. And I do believe is what you put out is what you get back. So you have to take every single artist and create them as though they are a Madonna or a Beyonce. And you have to work. And it's really hard when you're taking a new artist that nobody wants to deal with, that nobody don't want. They don't want to put them on a blog talk. They don't want to put them on regular radio. They don't want them in their newspapers. They don't want them nowhere. They just want you to come back to them when they've established themselves. So it makes it really hard for me because I have to break down those barriers. And I always say, give everybody a chance. But before you get a chance, you've got to be prepared to take that chance.
Okay, and that's what you do. You give them, you prepare them for the chance.
Yeah, I prepare them for that chance. Life is nothing but a big stage. We're rehearsing every single day. Know your script, know your part, so when it's time for you to go to read or to demonstrate what you're all about, you're set and you're ready. Push the button, let's do it. But if you're not sitting back here taking that time to develop yourself and to know about how to position and how to present yourself, you're going to lose out. You're not going to get that chance.
Now, I'm looking at an example. You've worked with Alicia Keys, and I remember when she first came out, she was rough around the edges. How did you work with her?
I was straight up and very honest. I said, you're rough around the edges, girl. You need to straighten this up and straighten it out now. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
She looked at me, she said, I know what you're talking about. Okay, all right, so let's just deal with that. I'll put it on the table.
Okay.
You know, I think, you know, all of these newspapers, the Times and the Daily News and the Post, they said the charm school for rappers, that he gave out tough love. That's what my mama gave me. And I'm never going to win a popularity contest. I'm a businessman. And I'm a teacher. I'm an educator.
Okay.
Here's the tough love, straight with no chaser. You know what time it is. You need to get it in order. Because you know the world ain't ready for that yet, so you need to conform. And then I went back to, you know, I said, let's remember back in the 50s and the 60s, black music was known as beach music. They were not playing our music on mainstream radio stations. Black artists could not have their pictures on their album covers. You would always see a name, or they would give the songs, give the production to a white, like Pat Boone. Things that were black, they would give it to Pat Boone. They would give it to the popular mainstream artists, and that's what they would go with. So Berry Gordy was smart enough to know that black music was being received wrong, and he wanted to take all of the demons out. So he put them all through artist development and image and style and diction and speech. And then it was no longer, they were accepted all over the world.
And look
Those
at it now.
Those things are important. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that it's such a failure for young independent record companies and for major record companies not to look at the importance of the development of the artist. No more product managers. If so, a product manager has to have 8 or 9 different clients or artists, which is not being able to really give them real artist development. They want to go and nitpick and say maybe he needs media coaching. But no, what he needs is development, artist development, the whole entire package, not just 1 or 2 items. I used to say that's record development, not artist development. Because the major record companies were only concerned with the sale of the record and not the artist. And that's why I tell the artist it's really important that you understand this business and that you begin to invest in yourself and find your own team that's going to work in adjacent with the record companies, independent or major. They got radio people, you should have radio people. They got a publisher, you should have a publicist. They got the... So that you understand how the whole thing works, it becomes a business. I implore the Ushers of the world, the Sean Combs of the world. I implore them because they took care of business and they're taking care of business. They know the business. They know all the tricks and all the treats.
That's interesting. Now, you have the Sean Combs, you have the Jay-Z's, you have all of these people. How do you think that they affect the smaller labels and smaller business people? What effect do you think they have on them?
Well, I think they have a major effect, because they're winning. I don't necessarily go with them 100% of how they go to win. But they're positive examples of how you can take a craft as a rapper and as a singer and become a mogul and begin to understand the importance of branding and marketing and product placement and ownership. They're smart enough to know the importance of owning their music and publishing and all of those things, because what we have to really look at is the importance of ownership. A recording artist, a rapper, particularly a rapper, these kids are going away, they fade in the light. They don't have no insurance. They ain't making no money. They're not really making money. They really can't repeat it and repeat it again. They have no guild, no associations, no alignment for their future. Some of them have to keep performing until they're 99 years old, because they haven't taken care of their business. They didn't write. They didn't understand publishing. They didn't understand their contract. They didn't understand recoupables, what was to be recouped and what was not to be recouped. They trusted the manager. The manager making 30%. So the manager making 30% and the booking agent making 15%, well, what the hell are you making? You're working for them.
That is. So you're saying that the majority, and I'm not saying all, but the majority of these artists out here are just out here.
Yeah, not understanding what it is to be an artist or to be a businessman. Not understanding any of those things. And that's why I believe it's so important that they know about the development of their goal, of their career. You got to know what this business is about in order to win in it. And that's why you get these one-time artists. And they thinking they all grand because you got one hit. You're a one-hit wonder. Hit it again and again and again and again, and then you got some longevity. But you're not hitting it because you're not listening, and you want to do it your way. And your way means the highway. You get off and you get lost on the highway. And they say, next.
Now, do you think that the record executives have a lot to do with the way we perceive music nowadays?
Well, I would say years ago maybe so. No, but I think that the artist has a lot. They have 80% of control in their image and what the industry is about these days. I think that they need to become responsible for the lyrical content, for the image, for what they position and what they put out there to their fans. I think that they're in control now. But there should always be that cohort, if you will, that they have by their side a good lawyer that can tell them the difference in right and wrong. So many of our young artists today are climbing major charts, major artists, and they got all these people around them, and the people are afraid of them. They're afraid of their check, baby. They don't want their check to go away. So they're not going to be truthful with them. They're not going to say, you know what? What you just did was totally uncalled for. You didn't need to do that. You know, and we can go on our Chris Browns. We can go on Justin Bieber. We can go on all of these people who make this huge success and this huge impact. And then they go to begin to do stupid things. Like speeding 100 miles an hour in a residential zone, by taking drugs, by cussing people out. Don't you know you're losing your fan base? How you was built because you were charismatic, you were clean, you had an ability to win over everything and everyone. And now you're falling to the wayside because you believe in the hype. You believe you ain't better than no one. I understand the competition is fierce, but don't compete against yourself because you're going to wind up hurting yourself.
So you're saying...
There is really, you know, there really has to be some serious care and concern with what's going on in the music industry today, and particularly our artists. Are we really selling music? Are we selling image? And are we selling what? It's ass? Is that what we're selling? Are we selling music? Image becomes to be much more important than lyrical content, the beat of the music, the pulsating sound. We're selling what? Image.
Wow. You are telling the truth. You do have to think about it, and you are telling the truth because of the fact that if, you know, you turn on the TV set and you look at everything and you listen to the lyrics and you look at the people in the street who are affected by it, you see how it is being played out in front of your eyes, and you're not pleased with what you see in front of your eyes. However, you don't take a stand to let anyone know that you're not pleased.
No, I know. I understand exactly what you're saying. You know what? We, as artists, as people in the music industry, must become responsible for what we create. Because what we create is dictated to how our children, our fans, act. Think about it. Why are the statistics in teenage pregnancy what it is? Because we allow 106 in Park, and all the other outlets to come on and say, it's okay to have a girlfriend, it's okay to have sex, it's okay to do all these things. We do this. Why is drugs so prevalent? Because we can get on TV and we can roll up a joint. We can smoke a joint. It's getting high. We want to be like these artists, and that's why I always said, be careful of what comes out of your mouth. First presentation is lasting presentation. That ain't old school. That's just school. That's just knowledge. Because, you know what? Andy Warhol told everybody, everybody gets 15 minutes. My whole thing here is that I want you to have 15 years. I want you to have longevity. If you don't have longevity, what's the purpose?
That is absolutely true. And you know as well as I do, there is no such thing. And you have also worked with a lot of athletes, and that must be the place where you find the ability to have longevity the most challenging.
Yeah, you know what? Because I think that anyone in the entertainment or the performing arts, they believe that it's going to last forever, and nothing does. And, I mean, why they have the task of a regiment filling the body and looking good, it doesn't go forever. Nothing stays the same, and everything must change. And with these athletes, with the authors of books, and all of these poets, and all these people to come to me, you have to be progressive. And you have to be a part of the time. And if you think you can't be part of the time, you need to put yourself in the circle of young people that are aware of what the times are. You got to adjust and make change. And you have a, I mean, they all have regimens. But then they go to the wayside because I think that they really start to believe the hype. They really start to believe that they're great. There's no greatness in a human being. The greatness is in the man upstairs for me. Life is a gift from him. And we need to cherish that gift and look at it as a gift. A gift is to be appreciated. And we're supposed to go back and be contributors to the gift, not take away from the gift.
Now, when you speak of longevity, you have had the pleasure of being with Miss Dionne Warwick for a number of years. How have you helped her maintain and continue to develop and grow and evolve through all those years?
You know, I'm going to try to tell you, it's been 20-something-odd years that I've been working with her. We just had this real serious relationship. We all have, between me and her, she has alter egos and I have an alter ego. Her alter ego is that her birth name is Marie Dionne Warwick. And Marie is the one that I always tease her with. I don't play with Marie. I always call to speak to Ms. Warwick. Because that's an alternate, that flip side. We understand each other. We love each other. I understand the trials and the tribulations of just staying current. When there are mistakes made in the career, we talk about it. We iron it out. We can't change it. We can only make things better. We take time to spend time with one another. There's nothing in the world that I don't talk to her about. I talk to her about everything today. She called me. She said, I know you thought I was missing in action. And we just sincerely love each other. And we do business. And we make money. Because we care about each other. We just put it on the table. Things that she doesn't like about me, trust me, she tells me. And I tell her, you know what, girl, you got fans all over this world, but I'm not one of them.
Wow.
And
so
that's the kind of relationship that we have.
And that's how you've been able to maintain the business
before. Oh, honesty. Just being really honest. I mean, very, very honest. And what I think when you're not honest with your client and you're not honest with yourself, don't start telling a bunch of lies because you can't remember.
Well, Well, we were in the midst of conversation with Angela Ellerby, and it seems as if the line dropped. I mean, I am just having such an amazing time listening to him talk about his insights on his career, a 40-year career that has given him the ability and the opportunity to work with some of the greatest, to meet some of the most well-known people that you and I, some of us, may not have had the opportunity to have. He happens to be the company, one of the media relations companies that I've been working with getting some of the amazing talent that I've had come on to this particular show. And I have to tell you that it has been nothing more, nothing short than, other than just a wonderful opportunity. We have him back right now so we can continue. You're back.
Yeah, I'm back. I guess we've been talking a while. This phone is not, the phone just dropped the call. Please forgive me.
Okay. That's okay. I was just telling everyone how, you know, having a 40-year career and having had the opportunity to work with such amazing talents and having the ability to meet some of the most phenomenal historians as well as people who are just moving and shaking must be a great, you have a great job.
No, you know what what makes me really happy? Not those established artists, the young ones, because I get a chance to mold them and to train them and to give them what my mom gave me, to love them and to guide them and to protect them and make sure that they're safe and that they're learning. That's what brings me pleasure and joy. Not the established artists. I mean, that's, you do what you do for them. But how about the wonderful new ones that have not had trial and tribulation, that you want to protect them from it? And you want to sit back and read to them, and you want them to read to you, and you want to go to movies, and you want to talk about social and political things that are affecting and then plaguing lives in general, and how you must be able to go on an interview and make that interviewer just a part of your career. Those are the things that make me happy. Those are the things that brings me joy. Yeah, okay. I guess if you look at my career, you would say, oh, is this, no, I like the no-name artist. I like to build that artist, to have that name, to be. That's what brings me the joy of my life.
Excellent.
It's working an artist. But trying to get the media and everybody else to understand the importance of breaking an artist is another thing. And then you have to start to talk about racism in the biggest numbers of it all. You know, we start talking about the Lettermans and the Lenos and all of these. It's not an easy job to get someone of color on there if they have not been a Grammy Award winner, if they have not been an Oscar or a Tony winner. It's difficult. But you got to keep trying. But that's the rewarding side of it all for me.
Wow. Now, if there were young artists out there who wanted to work with you, how can they find you?
Oh, I mean, they can always Google me. They can call me. They can go. I'm on Facebook, believe it or not, all the social media. And I'm accessible, you know. It's strangely, when people call me, they say, can I speak to Angela? And I say, well, who's calling them? And they go through this whole thing, and I say, oh, really? Okay, well, guess what? You got them. And they go, are you joking? I know I'm not joking. It's me. What do you want me? How do you want me to prove? You want to see my birth certificate via phone? It's me. It's making yourself accessible. I mean, at the end of the day, we all are our keepers. There's nothing special about me. Nothing. I drove a car down a street, down a highway. I knew how to bend and curve at detours. I knew what a yellow light was, a red light, and a green light was. And all I want to do is show everyone how to drive their lives to success at the end of the day for me. That's what it's all about. Because guess what? I ain't taking none of this with me. And we all got to turn and going. So you might as well plant seeds and let it grow and let your legacy continue. That's what it's really about at the end of the day. I think I'm one of the most misunderstood people on the face of this earth. because I come tough and I fight strong, but there's a whole other thing that goes on to let me keep carrying on. And that's what it's really all about. I'm a believer in the force of faith, and I'm a believer in the force of God. And that's what I go with.
Oh, my goodness. This has just been an amazing interview, and I feel it is an amazing opportunity for people to get to know you and to get to understand you and to know how you do what you do. I guess you could tell I have fire trucks around me.
Oh, please.
And it's just, I'm just honored to have this opportunity. We have worked together for a number of years, and I have been just in awe with what you have done for me, and I have to tell you, thank you very much.
Oh, no, thank you, and thank your listeners. You know, it's people like you to make people like me, to make your listeners want to be involved in you, because you give them opportunity, you give them diversity, you give them all the things that they're looking for. They can come to you. You're a one-stop show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Now, we're going to have to end this, even though I don't want to, but you can always come back. We would love to have you. We've already been on You, the Best Invention Ever, and they're waiting for you to come back, too. So you're always welcome to join us.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. I'm going to take you up on it.
I know you will. Yes, indeed. So we will talk again soon, and I want to thank you. And your media relations company is Double Exposure, and he can be found on – are you on Twitter as well?
I'm on Twitter, yeah, and Ulysses and Emily, and nobody's around me, so I don't know. But I'll get it and find out, and I'll tell
okay.
you. So maybe you can go back to your listeners and let them know.
Okay. I know you're on Facebook, and they can Google you, and they will find all kinds of information and contact numbers as well. So you are out there, and you are there, and you're ready, you're willing and waiting with open arms to help develop new young artists, as well as some of the artists who are not so new at the game, because you love what you do, and it shows.
Yeah, they call me to come. Go to Angelo. He'll bring you back. If you've been out here before, he'll bring you back again. So I'm for every artist. So you know what? I don't close my door to any opportunity. And I think that God gives you chances, and you should give other people chances. So I don't close the door. I welcome it.
Great. Thank you. Well, you have a wonderful evening. I thank you for this amazing opportunity, and we will have you back soon.
Thank you so much, and thank you. Thanks to your listeners as well, and I thank you all for supporting me.
Great. So, everyone, that was the amazing, wonderful, phenomenal Angela Ellaby. And we would like to tell you that we will have a show on Saturday, which will be Paradigm Shifters, Principles for Life and Success, which falls in line with some of the things Angela Ellaby was talking about. And this just gets your mind right so that you can be able to do the things that you want to do with your life, because that's what it's all about. And we have our other shows scheduled as the week goes by, and we will definitely keep you posted and informed. Be well, take care, have a good evening.
That's our show for today. So until next time, keep it real, listen, learn, and live.